What's up, PBR fans? This is Sam. I wanted to give you a quick note before we started this episode. This is a long one, and we really liked some of the content and discussion we got into. And so we haven't done this before, but in order to kind of preserve some of the content of this discussion, we've actually taken one episode and just cut it in half at the middle and made it into two episodes. We've done some two-parters before, but they were designed to be two parts ahead of time. This was originally one long conversation with me and Josh, and just for the sake of your souls, we're cutting this into two pieces. So this is going to be part one of our discussion on guns and violence and how the Christian theology speaks into that. And then next week, we'll actually release part two of that discussion. So enjoy. Please let us know your thoughts on it, and we'll keep the conversation going.
Nobody cares about it. I'll try to do better.
No, it's good.
You're listening to Please Be Reasonable, where we seek to speak humbly and passionately about things that matter and things that don't.
Hello, hello! Welcome to Please Be Reasonable. I'm your co-host, Sam.
And I'm your co-host, Josh.
Josh, what's up, my dude?
What is up? Here we are.
Here we are.
Still doing this podcast.
Still making a podcast.
You're still listening. Thank you.
Yeah, all of you. Both of you. Thank you. Thank you. Josh, your house is quickly becoming a jungle.
Yeah.
And I loves it.
We're just trying to get a lot of oxygen in the house.
Was that really the mindset?
No, Emily's just on a plant kick.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, like a lot of plants. And they're big. Where'd you get them all?
That is a question for Emily.
Okay.
Combination of
you purchasing them?
Friends and
are you purchasing them, Josh?
A few.
Do they really improve your air? I
don't know. They're actually getting ready to go outside.
Oh yeah, it's March. It's spring.
Oh yeah.
Kinda. It's getting there.
Yeah.
It'll be spring when this comes out.
Yeah. Happy spring.
Hey guys, I hope you're enjoying the delicious weather. Well, we didn't talk about what we were gonna talk about right now.
We're so prepared
to open up the podcast.
Did you do anything quirky this week?
Oh, dude, I'm so boring right now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything fun right now.
Yeah.
I can tell you something gross my daughter's doing.
Oh, I can tell you something gross my son was doing, but now it's all done coming out of his orifices, so that's great.
My daughter is on this kick right now where she refuses to poop. She just holds it in and, like, forces it down.
Does that work?
For a couple days. Yeah, and then it's bad. And so she's in the middle of potty training right now.
So if you guys don't have kids yet, you have some great stuff to look forward to.
If you knew what percentage of the conversation you would have with the love of your life would revolve around poop. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how much, as a grown adult, I sit with my wife and my best friend and talk about the poop of my daughter.
I had a...
Anyway, all that was to say that today she was refusing to poop all day long. I was like, you gotta do it, you gotta do it, you gotta do it. And so Kim made her go sit in the toilet, and she wandered out and was like, I don't want to. But she, like, had no diaper on or underwear or anything because she had been sitting in the toilet. And then all of a sudden she goes, I'm going! And she pooped all over our floor.
Oh, nice.
That's so dumb. I don't even know why I shared that with you.
I don't have any stories quite that great, but
I hope this podcast survives somehow the next 11 years and Amelia hears this as a middle schooler.
And is like, oh my goodness. I had a terrifying but also awesome conversation with Malachi the other night.
Yeah?
He was asking me questions about, you know, life, the universe, and everything.
Whoa.
And he's just so insightful. Like, I can't pull things past him, which is good. Like, I want him to be a critical thinker, but it's hard for a 4-year-old. He's like, First he was talking about, like, I thought God could only see us through windows, but not through roofs. And I was like, God can see through everything. And he's like, how does he do that? And then he changed the subject. He's like, how do the planets move? And so he's talking about gravity, and then how the Earth has its own gravity too. And, you know, he's like, how do we stay on the Earth even when we're sideways? Because he's thinking about his globe. And so this is all great. And then he says, what did he say? He's like, but if Earth has gravity that keeps us down, then how do we go up to heaven?
Dang.
And like it's, I don't know, like, it, on the one hand, like, it's terrifying that he's asking questions like that with like what his mind's capable of understanding about, like, the mysteries of God and the universe. But I also really love the fact that even though he's only 4 years old, he's, like, already seeing, like, the limitations of, like, the, like, ancient cosmic understanding.
Yeah.
That is, like, expressed in, like, the biblical text. And, like, even though that's even hard for, like, us as adults to wrestle with sometimes, I love the fact that he's, like, already, like, approaching those things, even though it's also terrifying.
Dude, that's cool.
Yeah.
We had one of those conversations with Amelia the other day where she asked us if Jesus was imaginary or not, because she's learning imagination and, like, pretend. Mm-hmm. And she goes, wait a minute. Jesus isn't pretend. He's real, right? But it was like a question, like, he's real, right? Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Not sure. Yes. Yes. Yes, Amelia. Understand pure orthodox doctrine.
So up next on Parenting Podcast.
What are we actually talking about today, Josh?
We are talking about...
gun. Talking about gun control and guns and violence and the Second Amendment and Obama and how he wants to take away your guns, even though he's not even president anymore.
And how we're not going to let him.
Not my guns.
Yeah.
So I talked to a guy in my church about this.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, because I knew we were talking about the subject.
Yeah.
And he said, he goes, say the government makes you come and register your guns, and so you register your 11 guns. And then the government comes.
You have 11.
And then the government comes and takes away your guns. How many guns do you have left?
Is this a conservative joke?
Yes.
11?
No. 35, because you didn't register those ones. Yeah. Isn't that dumb?
Hiding guns like...
Dakota? That's the dumbest joke ever. But I love you.
Yeah, so what... I think we should start out and just reveal our where we're coming from on this.
Like, yeah, I think in general, we should probably show our cards right off the bat and just let people know our biases.
Well, because I feel like
we kind of dance around it a little bit.
And especially we're trying to be reasonable.
Yeah.
And this topic gets more into, maybe not more, but it gets a lot into politics, not just theology.
Yeah.
And I actually like trying to have reasonable discussions on politics.
Yeah,
and, I do too. But yeah, let's just, like, what is your background with guns, Sam?
Oh, Josh, I am a life member of the NRA.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I come from a, we talked before on our environmental episode about, I come from a family that is kind of outdoorsman and sportsman, like in the, Cabela's hunting Bass Pro sense of the term sportsman. My grandfather bought me a life membership in the NRA when I was born. I was actually the youngest life member in the NRA's history. Wow. There is a framed photo at my house of my dad shaking Charlton Heston's hand while holding me as an infant.
Sam, that's like legit. Wait, you're just making this up.
I'm dead serious.
That is, wow.
Yeah, I should tweet a picture of
you. Are like so qualified to have opinions about guns.
Yeah, so I grew up around guns. I mean, I had my, in Missouri, it's called a heritage card. Hunting license.
We at least need to tweet that picture when this episode comes out.
Okay, yeah, I'll find it. But like, so in Missouri, it's called a heritage card. I had my hunting license the day I could get it. I grew up going out to the conservation department, learning how to safely handle guns. I grew up going, like my family, my dad has a membership at a rifle range. And so I would go out with my dad and shoot hunting rifles and shoot handguns and things like that. I've been bird hunting and deer hunting since I was a kid. So grew up around guns. I own several guns. I really enjoy sporting clays and bird hunting, like pheasant hunting and quail hunting, things like that, where you can take dogs out and have them track. I like doing stuff like that. So,
have you had any personal experiences with guns that have affected your views?
Now that's an interesting question. I can't think of like a single experience that was like, oh my gosh, that was formative for me. Other than just the fact that I grew up in a conservative Republican home that was very pro NRA and pro sportsmen and all those different things.
And you own guns?
Yeah. I mean, when I say like my family is into guns, like my dad has like a secret chamber in his basement where he like makes his own ammunition and like he has two gun safes and all that different stuff. My grandpa, who bought me the NRA membership, used to smelt his own bullets.
My dad's a couple steps removed from that, but yeah. I can identify with that mindset.
Yeah.
I did not grow up quite with the same level of... I was not birthed NRA membership. My dad's probably in the NRA, I think, though. I think I saw some literature from the NRA around the...
Yeah, I still get the their magazine. And, American Rifleman or something.
I went shooting to like a shooting range a couple times with my dad and some brothers. And I remember like being a little unnerved by like how easy it seemed it would be to accidentally shoot another human.
Yes.
At those things. But also like it also kind of just like affirmed my existing like kind of libertarian.
Wait, how old were you when you went? You already had libertarian thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even shoot at all till I was, like, at least, like, late teenagers or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, but the experience also just kind of affirmed my, like, oh, yeah, these things seem scary, but they're, if you know how to handle them, people are pretty safe with them.
Yeah.
And you know, they're used for good kind of a thing.
You know, it's now that you're saying this, I do remember one specific formative thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I grew up around this stuff. My dad and my grandpa were always really, really vocal about gun safety and how to properly handle a gun and how to respect a gun. And I actually remember one time when my grandpa sat me down because I was at his house and I was just, you know, little kid, playing with toy guns and pointing them and going bang, bang, bang. And he sat me down and was like, you do not point guns at human beings, even toy guns. And like he had this, like gave me a lecture about it. He's like, you, even with toys, like you never point a gun at something unless you intend to kill it. And it was just like, you don't play and you don't pretend. And I remember like taking that really seriously. And I remember as a kid, when I would play army, I would like with my friends, I would like point the gun like a foot to the right of them, even though like we were playing or whatever, just because that impressed on me.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, but that going to a range a couple times is pretty much my entire experience with firearms.
Okay.
Like I held for like a while, pretty strident view, like political views about, guns and, you know, pro Second Amendment and, guns are necessary for self-defense and as a check against the government and not trying to, you know, trying to restrict them doesn't work anyway. And all, you know, I once had this Glenn Beck book that had a whole chapter on guns and I was like, oh yeah, these are just great arguments. They're so compelling.
Yes, I love everything about that.
And, but I was still like,
Was there a chapter in the Glenn Beck book about investing in gold?
I don't remember if he was I don't remember if he was that where he was on that. But I still wasn't like completely comfortable with them personally. And I do distinctly remember when we first, after we got married and had our own house, I like kind of had this like residual feeling of like, I guess we should probably own a gun. Like that's what you do, right? And like, and we were even like starting to like, we'd like kind of had a conversation like, I guess we should go look at a gun sometime and get one or something. And, but like, weren't really in any hurry to do it. And then around that time, I think was when we were introduced to Preston Sprinkle.
Oh, yeah.
Got his book, Fight, The Christian Case for Nonviolence. And there's probably other general ways that, like, some of our views and things were shifting around that time, too. But that book pretty much convinced me, like, no, I don't want to own a gun. And I'm pretty confident about that.
Yeah.
And so that's it.
Yeah, that book was formative for me too. Probably not to the extreme that it was for you, because I definitely still have a stack of guns at my house. but I did, I'm sure we'll get into this, but that did really affect some of my views on the ideas of self-defense. Not necessarily gun ownership, but self-defense. Mm-hmm. It really affected that a little bit, which is the biggest difference. So we had a loaded self-defense gun at that time in our house.
Yeah. And so to complete my personal background, and
dang it, I keep interrupting you. I'm sorry.
Hey, that's, we're friends and we're talking and that's how it goes, right? Currently I feel like I'm probably about as moderate as you can be on the political spectrum. I feel like completely banning firearms is impractical and probably unhelpful. And I feel that completely fighting all regulations and restrictions on guns is also impractical and unhelpful.
Yep.
And but I also remain personally opposed to owning a firearm. So that's kind of my bias.
Okay. I'm probably pretty close to that. I can't, like, I feel like both sides of the aisle are stymieing the discussion in a way that is entirely unhelpful. And that's really frustrating to me. And I have some theological convictions centered, I think, around violence and self-defense.
Yeah.
But I also, I don't know, I make a mental disconnect between that and gun ownership as a concept.
Yeah.
I really enjoy bird hunting. I think, again, this goes back to our conservation, our environmentalist episode, but I actually think hunting and those responsible hunting can be something that's actually like a stewardship thing of the planet and kind of engage us in care for the creation. And so I actually think that's a really, really positive thing.
Yeah, controlling overpopulation.
Yeah. And even just having connection to your food supply, I think can be a really helpful, beneficial thing.
Yeah. I guess the main reason we picked this topic, because there was recently a major mass shooting.
Was that on the recording? Dang it. It's a New York Times update on my iPad.
Oh, you read that liberal New York Times? NRA member.
Actually,
it was a small Venn diagram right there.
Even to make it even better, it was actually a push notification from CNN telling me about a New York Times article about Barack Obama. So
the Venn diagram of lifelong NRA members who also I love it. But no, we wanted to talk about this because there was a major recent mass shooting in a high school in Florida. It's led to, just your...
Yeah, same discussion.
Same old online yelling and stuff. And we were like, we should have a reasonable discussion about this.
Yeah, and yeah, it's just, this is an issue in our culture that's not going away. it's not going away. And I think I find that oftentimes it seems like the Christians in my circles have a hard time having just a calm conversation about this. It always seems confused and muddied, and it seems like there's oftentimes tension between people's spiritual convictions and political convictions, and it just seems like a good conversation to have.
Yeah, and I know, like, I'm not on Facebook as much these days, but I remember recently.
Good on you, Josh.
I had gotten on, and you know, I just saw, it was in the wake of all this, and I just saw all these posts from conservative friends and family that were, you know, just like, to me, it just felt like it was very, very like fearful and mm-hmm. like, hey, this is we don't have a gun problem, we have a heart problem. We don't have a gun problem, we have a problem of God's not in schools. We don't have a gun problem. Whatever it is, it's not a gun problem. Stop talking about gun control. And like, to me, it just felt like people were just terrified and just lashing out like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I was like, hey, well, let's, why can't we just talk reasonably? Maybe there's some reasonable, regulations and things. Like, why do we have to get all jumpy about like,
yeah,
don't touch my guns at all. Like, it really felt like people were like setting guns up as an idol.
Yeah.
But then I watched a couple conservative videos, like of Ben Shapiro, who's kind of a big conservative talk guy right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also this video of that went viral of some Virginia Republican that was talking about the issue.
Yeah. That's good.
And it reminded me a little bit of that mindset where a lot of these people are coming from. Because, like, I don't really see a lot of the pro-gun control arguments and stuff that people are throwing out.
Mm-hmm.
Just my circles, my whatever, I just don't see a lot of that. But a lot of the folks that are lashing out in all these ways against gun control, they're seeing all these people making all these emotional and bad arguments for gun control. And, you know, like whenever there's a shooting, sometimes people will suggest things that may not even have had any actual effect on the specifics of what caused that shooting.
Yeah.
Or they'll lash out, they'll, you know, accuse people of who oppose anything of being shills for the NRA.
Yeah.
Of not caring about kids. And, oh, you love the Second Amendment more than kids, or, you know.
Yeah.
And so people, conservatives who have these principled views and, you know, these beliefs that they have based on principles and on facts about what they see as the need, right for self-defense, the need to defend yourself. And, you know, like Shapiro was going on about all the ways that the government and the local sheriff's office and everything failed to prevent the shooting when they had all these things. And, you know, I guess there was a sheriff like on site who actually didn't run in and do anything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's all like, why do you want to, you know, the people that were there, like didn't, the government failed to protect us. And you're saying that you need to take my guns away because you won't let me protect myself. Or whatever. And so,
and I actually, on a side note, the video from the senator,
yeah.
I actually, from a purely just like political standpoint or social standpoint, his argument about firearms from self-defense being an equalizer,
yeah,
of essentially leveling out the tables of strong, fast people dominating over small, weak, slow people, like how guns in a defense situation can even the playing field, was actually, it's a good point. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, so, but anyway, just like all that just kind of reminded me that a lot of conservatives kind of feel like they're under siege,
mm-hmm.
and that that their opponents are just making these emotional arguments. They just want to ban all guns. They don't understand all the details and the facts. They don't even know what assault rifles are or are not. Yeah. And they just hate, they're afraid of guns, they hate guns, whatever. And so they feel like they're under siege. And so that kind of helped me understand a little bit why a lot of conservatives kind of react the way they do. They get really defensive.
Mm-hmm.
But for my part, because I don't really fit in those kind of partisan boxes so much anymore.
Yeah.
I'm just like, hey, I just want to have like some of those arguments don't really make as much sense to me as they used to. Like I see a little more nuance in them.
Yeah. Well, what ends up happening, it's the same thing that ends up happening with every divided like political issue, is each thought process, each side represents the other in such a ridiculous way that it takes away from the actual discussion. The whole thing, like, have you seen the thing where it's, I think he even mentioned that in the one video you showed me, where some on the conservative side will say like, oh, well, you know, we want to ban guns because people die in gun violence, but what about Planned Parenthood and all the money that's going to abortions? We shouldn't, if you really care about protecting kids, you'll, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I feel like that kind of argument, and I'm not trying to single out the conservatives, I think the Democratic side of the argument's doing the same thing. But that kind of argument, it just destroys discussion, because you look at it, there's an easy way to look at that and go, yeah, I find that disturbing too. Let's have a discussion about that, but let's finish this conversation about guns first.
Yeah, it's like if you put things in political boxes,
yeah,
where it's a team thing, and it either mm-hmm. one, if you're something's for one team or against, it's against the other team.
Yeah,
then like you can't acknowledge one point without putting down another. Like if somebody's not playing on either team, you're like, hey, why can't we talk about both these things? Why can't we have more nuance here?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I just have to say something about like a couple of the things that I keep hearing that just make me go, like there's a couple like arguments I keep hearing from conservatives that I just wish they would stop, because they're not that great. And like, so just hear me out. I'm not trying to take all your guns away. Like I'm not a, you know, whatever. I'm trying to make you not defensive here, but like people always,
because they will defend themselves.
Like
lethal force.
Yes, you have the right to defend yourself. But there's a few arguments that are just, they're just not good. They just need to be let go.
Some arguments you just need to let die.
The first one is Chicago.
Oh yeah.
Every time anything comes up, it's like, well, look at Chicago. They tried gun control. They have so many homicides. And like it, you actually don't want to be making that argument, because Chicago used to have strict gun control. A few years ago, judges struck it down because it was unconstitutional. But after that happened, gun violence went up in Chicago. And then, so not only is it not as strict anymore, and not only did the striking it down actually not help, but New York City is a similar large city, has similar strict gun controls, and they have had the lowest violent crime rates in their history. Every year for the last few years, they've been hitting record lows. And it's actually really amazing and inspiring for the potential that I hope for our city. But like every time I hear a conservative saying Chicago, I think, what about New York City? Like, and that kind of points to the problem of using statistics and all, like on both sides will pull out, well, this country, this state did this sort of thing, and it shows that gun control works. This shows that gun control doesn't work. And I mean, it's complicated. You can cherry pick stuff all day long.
Exactly.
But like, just because something can't completely solve something, it's still at least possible that it could make something harder.
Now, I do think it's important to point out the benefit of the argument at the same time.
Yeah.
Because what I like about that, what I like about the Chicago argument, even though it's not a good argument, what I like about the principle of it is saying, hey, listen, let's look at the actual stats.
Yeah.
We have case studies. Let's look at the actual crime stats compared to gun control laws and let's see what's actually happening. That thought process can pull you out of the emotion of the moment, because we're in this cycle right now where a tragedy happens and we want to act reactionary to the tragedy, and that's not beneficial.
And that's true. And to flip it around and criticize liberal or progressive views, a lot of times I think people propose a solution and they imagine it as if the law can direct reality.
Yep.
Like they're imagining a different reality.
Yep.
But the real world, they're actually like, you can't actually make that reality. You can only make it a law that then can or cannot be obeyed, can or cannot be enforced.
Yeah.
Have different costs and side effects. So like, it's one thing to imagine a world where such and such specific kind of weapon is completely banned. It's another to create a law for that effect and then see what happens in the real world. So, I think you definitely have to have an appreciation for real world data and evidence.
Yeah.
Even though it also gets messy and you have to make sure you're not just looking for cherry pick stuff that supports what you already believe.
Exactly. Which is really, that's the thing is, yes, to have a reasonable discussion, we actually have to look at evidence. We have to look at the case studies, but you also have to look at that with enough humility to take what they say.
Yeah.
And to actually learn from them instead of, you know, going in with a confirmation bias.
Second bad argument that I'm tired of seeing is, we don't have a gun problem. We have a heart problem. It's a people problem. It's not a gun problem.
Yeah, this is the 2018 version of guns don't kill people, people kill people.
My response to that is yes, absolutely. We do have a people problem. We do have a sin problem. It's a problem of people's hearts. And since we can't completely control people's hearts, that's why we have laws and checks and balances. That's why our founding fathers set up a democracy, not a monarchy.
Yeah.
Because we had a king problem. We had a person problem. And so that's why, since we can't control other people, we need laws to help protect us from those people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the flip side is, like I said, just because you set up a law doesn't mean it will actually work.
I think the cool thing about that, too, is, and this was something from my upbringing growing up, is one of the things my grandfather and my dad always said was, you know, a gun is a tool. A gun is a thing you can do to accomplish a task. And something that I think is beneficial about that statement, not a gun problem, a heart problem, is remembering, like, man, a gun can look scary just like any tool can look scary. And you don't want to demonize it because of that. You want to actually take a step back, again, out of emotional reactionism, and have an intelligent discussion about the use and control of that tool.
Yeah. And the effectiveness of laws and regulations goes both ways. Like,
yeah,
setting up a regulation doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work perfectly. It doesn't mean it's going to fail perfectly either.
Yeah.
Like, something may not, you know, such and such regulation or some sort of barrier requirement to obtain a gun may not completely eliminate certain forms of violence, but it may raise the bar. It may make things a little bit harder. It could still have some kind of effect.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was going somewhere.
I don't know if you're about to go here, but I feel like what you just said, like, that's an expression of the argument of, like, you know, saying this is a gun-free zone just means the only people there with guns will be criminals, sort of thing. Like, it doesn't actually help that, but it may make it more difficult. It may putting the laws in place. Like, I feel like the argument I hear all the time is no law you have is going to stop people from doing that. But that's not necessarily what it's trying to do. It's not trying to get 100%. It's trying to make it more difficult.
Locking your door is not going to stop 100% of burglars, but it might stop some of them.
Yeah, so th- that's that's almost verbatim the analogy I use when I talk about that is I have a Jeep, so it has a cloth top. And so there's no point in locking my doors because anyone who walks by and wants to steal something out of my car can poke a hole in the roof with a car key. So locking my doors is laughably poor security. And yet there are times, depending on where I'm eating lunch, where I go, oh, I'm gonna go ahead and lock the doors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to give that one little extra bit of difficulty.
I feel like some conservatives might say, well, you know, maybe there are some some regulations or specific things that could be helpful or have some value, but the left, the liberals, they won't be satisfied until they ban everything. It's a slippery slope.
Yes, slippery slope.
We can't give an inch. And I don't know, as someone who's like not really in like the partisan back and forth, I feel like that's just not an accurate representation of like the majority of Americans.
Yep.
Like I feel like you have to step out of that back and forth bubble a little bit, like social media where you amplify the craziest views on the other side and that makes you feel all scared about how terrible they are. And then both sides do that. And there's just a huge mass of people in the middle just saying, hey, I don't want to totally ban guns. I don't want to totally have no restrictions on guns. I just have some ideas here.
Yeah, the whole we can't give an inch because it's a slippery slope thing, to me, that is the most terrifying argument on the conservative side. Because what it's essentially saying is, yeah, there's some regulations that would probably be beneficial, but we're not going to do that because you'll go farther than that. Which is so incredibly callous. To me, that's shocking that the right, as it were, would be able to hold to that with the clear conscience.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you, like when I look up certain videos or listen to certain speakers, I can understand why that seems reasonable if those are the things you're listening to.
Yeah.
But when I'm not listening to those things, it doesn't seem reasonable.
And I guess my question is, and I'm actually curious because that's the thing I hear, right, is I'll hear my conservative friends and family say, it's a slippery slope. If you give an inch, they'll take a mile. If you allow regulation, they'll take away our guns. But I guess my thing is, I think I'm in more like social media and stuff and more liberal circles than you are. I don't think I'm hearing anyone say that.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
if you surround yourself with media that amplifies like the worst arguments for gun control,
yeah,
because they are out there. If you surround yourself with voices that are amplifying those voices, saying this is what they want, then you'll feel justified
yeah.
in having that siege mentality.
There was a video that was popping around Facebook, and I should have grabbed an audio clip from it. It was near the end of Obama's presidency, and it was this town hall meeting, and a conservative guy was asking him about gun control and his desire to increase regulations and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of devolved into this little bit of a back and forth. And the guy used the slippery slope argument where he was like, anything you do, like you're just going to want to take away guns. It was President Obama, and it was just like, that's laughable. Like, of course I don't want to take away people's guns. There's been more guns sold under my presidency than any other president in U.S. history. And I'm proud of that. And I thought, that's interesting. Now, obviously, like, he's, you know, he's trying to prove a political point and get a little feather in his hat because it's on camera and all that. But I hadn't thought about that facet of it, right? Where he's just like, mm-hmm. I'm the most liberal president in the country's history. And there's tons and tons of guns being sold in my presidency. And which just makes me ask the question, like, is that a boogeyman? Or is there like an actual large force in the public discussion that's saying no, yeah, total gun ban completely? Because if there is, I'm just not hearing it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not qualified enough to say. I don't really think there is. I'm sure there's certain conservative voices that are making the case that there is.
Yeah, and right. There's definitely people who believe that. It doesn't seem to be like a large social push.
Yeah.
What you
believe about that will affect your ability to have those discussions.
Yeah.
Because if you believe that there's this huge they that wants to, you know, take all your guns away. Then someone like me who wants to have a moderate conversation, like, well, hey, maybe let's consider such and such regulation or whatever. Then I'm going to be lumped into that they.
Yep.
Like, I'm part of the they now.
Yeah.
But where from my point of view, like, there is no they, and I'm just trying to have a discussion.
Yep.
So, but I think recognizing, and this goes for any polarization on any side of an aisle or whatever, trying, like, recognizing that somebody may have a view like that can be helpful in approaching someone. Like, especially if you're someone who's more liberal on these topics and you want to have a conversation with a conservative, recognizing that they may have a siege mentality can help you approach it and try to, you know, differentiate yourself from the bad arguments.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other conservative arguments you don't like?
Oh yeah, one more.
Oh, one more. Okay.
Just in general, I feel like a lot of the arguments about, you know, some stuff that gets into culture wars, like trying to say about why it's not a gun problem, why it's about because we took God out of schools, because there's broken homes, because there's trying to diagnose like the real reason. And say that it has absolutely nothing to do with guns. I feel like, not that there's not some validity there, but I feel like a lot of times that conversation acts like America is the only country in the world.
Yep.
And like, you have to, whatever your theory is, you have to account for the fact that there's like other countries with similar, of similar economic status, religious status, demographic status to the United States that doesn't have mass shootings at the rate that we do.
Yeah.
Like you just have to account for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not automatically saying that gun control is the difference. Some people would jump to that case. And like we said, you have to look at data. It's confusing. But to automatically dismiss it as like a cultural thing, I feel like sometimes misses the fact that, well, what about, you know, France or whatever?
Yeah.
That doesn't have God in schools or that, you know, whatever.
Which that, so that's the thing that I think is so important to that is you can acknowledge that fact, right? That something is, this is not a pun I'm intending, but something is misfiring in American culture. That we have the amount of mass violence that we do. And you don't have to, like, acknowledging that doesn't mean you have to jump to the conclusion that we should ban all guns. That's not like, you know what I mean? Like, that's not a necessary conclusion of that. But we should own that as a culture and go, man, that's not good. Like, we should actually be willing to evaluate that data and actually have a conversation about that.
Yeah. And there's definitely, I think, there should be room to see the gospel as as part of the answer to that.
Absolutely. Come on, man. I'm the pastor. It's supposed to be my job to say that. Stealing my thunder. Can I give two liberal arguments that I want to go away?
Do it.
Because you said you don't see them as often.
Yeah, do it.
These are two that I hate, and I should have prepared this ahead of time, but I see these on Facebook all the time. And Twitter. The one is, I'll see people say, you're defending the Second Amendment, but think about the people who wrote the Second Amendment. They were racists and bigots and slave owners. Mm. Do you want to take their advice?
Really?
Yeah.
That's bad.
That's a bad argument, because yes, I do want to take their advice on certain things, not other things, just like every other human being.
Yeah.
Yeah, every single person who's ever come up with a good idea has also had bad ideas and areas of awful sin in their life and areas where there's society. Including myself. Exactly. So looking at the Founding Fathers and some of the atrocities that their culture overlooked and even some of their personal failings as human beings does not mean that they are wrong about a particular tenet of how to run a society. And that does not directly follow. So please stop resharing that Facebook post. And the other one I don't like is people will say the Second Amendment was written in a world where the only guns that existed were muzzle-loading rifles. Therefore,
yeah,
it doesn't apply anymore. And there was even like a viral video that went around that I thought was incredibly distasteful about a guy trying to do a mass shooting at his office with a Revolutionary War era musket. And he fires one shot and then he's reloading the gun and they tackle him. And it's, you shouldn't look it up. It's really distasteful. Like, it's trying to prove a point and it ends up just kind of being gross. But the point of that is like, it's another thing where it's like, well, there's something to be discussed there, but it's setting aside the inherent principle or argument that conservatives are making about the Second Amendment, that it's not about the particulars of the firearm. It's about the principle of government protecting the people versus people protecting the people. And I feel like having a conversation about the change in technology can be a cool conversation, but has to be done in the context of understanding that's not actually what the Second Amendment's about. It's about a larger principle of individual's relationship to the governing body.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
those are the two I think should go away on the liberal side. There's probably more, but I try to avoid Facebook.
Awesome. What do you think about just the idea of, and I want to get into the theology of this, but just the practicality first of wanting to own a gun to defend yourself.
Oh man, like, this is so spicy.
Do you think that is a, like, practically, does that actually work?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Oh man, I am torn on this, so I can't give an easy answer. But let me give you a little bit of context for why I'm torn on this. So something that's really interesting, Missouri is an open carry state. So you no longer have to be like licensed to be a concealed carry or whatever. But we do have certain restrictions on where you can and can't carry. One of the restrictions in Missouri is that if you want to bring your concealed carry firearm into a church service, you're supposed to write a letter to the pastor and inform them and get their permission.
Does this happen to you?
Yeah. So I'm a pastor at a church, and I get notification when people desire to carry in a religious gathering in our body. And that's really weird to me.
And what do you say?
I don't say anything. Usually I'm just kind of like, yeah. I mean, there are several people that carry firearms, and I think both of our gatherings. I think, yeah. I don't remember. I'd have to look at the other church, but in the one I'm at. Yeah. And my whole thing is I 100% get the argument, and I even get the spiritual conviction behind it. So I don't know if you're aware of this, Josh, but in my faith tradition in Baptist world, it was maybe 15 years ago. I'd have to look it up. Early 2000s. There was one of our churches in our kind of St. Louis association where a dude walked into the gathering on a Sunday morning and walked down the aisle and shot the pastor in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy. And that's kind of, he died. And it was kind of what started some of the discussion in our area about, man, should you have security teams? And should you have security teams who are trained in what to do with an intruder? And should you have security teams who are armed? Do we have police officers in our churches? I was at a church for a while where we had a couple FBI agents and it was members of the church. And so they just took it upon themselves to always come to church armed and to kind of walk around the perimeter during the gathering when people were all in rooms, or they would wander around our children's building and things like that. And I get that. I get the heart behind that of saying, man, we want to protect our children and protect our family. We want them to feel safe at church. And I think the way that translates to homes makes even more sense of people saying, man, I want my family to feel safe in my home. I want my kids to know that if something awful happens, that I will do everything I can to protect them. So I think there's even a theological piece to that where people will say, man, I am I am commanded by God to do my best to protect my family, to care for my children. I understand that. It's something personally that I really wrestle with. And I've told you this before, but even though I'm the life NRA guy and I have guns in my house and things like that, they are all trigger locked, and there are no loaded firearms in my house. There's no self-defense gun in my house. I don't carry a concealed carry gun or anything like that. But I have really close friends who do, and I don't necessarily begrudge them that. You know what I mean? So that's probably way more answer than you wanted.
No, that's perfect. I feel like my opinion is, it's kind of nuanced. I believe defensive gun use definitely does happen.
Yeah.
Where having a gun prevents someone from causing a crime.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like, on the other hand, there are also situations where having a gun elevates the situation.
Yep.
And that becomes more violent than it would have otherwise. And mm-hmm. I'm not qualified to say how often one or the other happens.
But both of those scenarios definitely exist.
Yeah. And, you know, my view on this is somewhat influenced by not only having a conservative background on these things, but then also having some experience more with, as I've tried to learn more about inner city violence mm-hmm. and the dynamics between gangs and things, because I have a heart to have an impact on those things. And learning about those things helps me understand why a lot of people that live in violent neighborhoods tend to be more for gun control.
Yeah.
And you're always saying, why can't, you know, we got to do something to get guns away from all these teenagers and so forth.
Oh my gosh. Fistic knife gun and Jeffrey Canada's story about his first gun. And
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's a really eye-opening book. Because so the conservative argument is, you need a gun to, if you have a gun, you can prevent violence. Like if more people have guns, then criminals won't try to use their guns.
Yeah.
But whereas, and they're in a situation where they're not running into criminals with guns very much.
Yeah.
In their own personal lives. So that's their logic, and it seems compelling, right? But then somebody lives in a violent neighborhood, everybody's already walking around with guns, everybody already has guns, let me say this a little more coherently. The conservative argument is if the criminal thinks you might have a gun, he'll be less likely to attack you.
Yes.
And that's why the whole concealed carry is a big thing. If the criminal knows you have a gun or thinks you might have a gun, then you're supposed to have a better chance. He's not going to attack you. Whereas somebody lives in a violent neighborhood, everybody's running around with guns. Everybody thinks they need a gun because everybody else has a gun. And they think they need it to defend themselves, but it doesn't make things safer.
Yep.
It actually makes criminals quicker to shoot because they think, oh, the other guy might shoot me first.
Yep.
And so people in those environments, with their experience, they're like, and again, it may or may not be practical, whatever they want to do, but it really gives them this yearning for a world where everybody doesn't have a gun.
Yeah.
And their experience makes it seem like more guns makes things less safe, whereas the conservative thinks more guns would make you more safe.
Yeah.
And again, both situations may happen in different circumstances, but I do feel sometimes like the person that's never really experienced the threat of violence and has this idea of owning a gun for self-defense, like I feel like it's a little bit of this like hero fantasy of like, if I get in a situation, I'll pull out my gun and save the day.
Yeah.
And it's like, it may be different if you have military experience or like you have a lot of experience or whatever, but I wonder for a lot of people, it's just kind of like this mental fantasy that you really have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
What you would do.
You have no clue what you're going to do in that situation.
And you're afraid of experiencing that fear. And so that's why you have this gun to protect yourself. But if you were actually in that environment, you have no idea if you would save the day or if you would make things worse.
Yeah.
Like,
on a side note, really quick though, that what you just said, that argument goes the other way too, because it's really easy to say that, man, it's easy for me to have a conviction of nonviolence and I don't need a gun for self-defense because I live in a safe environment where it's very unlikely I would ever need it. Yeah. So it's easy for me to have that conviction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really respect people who have that conviction and still live in violent neighborhoods.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know, dude. My next door neighbor got stabbed while we were right there in the neighborhood, man. Just happened. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Did I tell that story in the podcast?
I don't remember, but
we'll save that for a different day.
We're talking about guns, Sam.
You should have mentioned that in your weird arguments conservatives should stop having.
Well, yeah, that, like,
they'll share some news story about someone going crazy in a shopping mall with a knife and how many people they stabbed.
Well, we kind of covered that with, like, well, it won't stop everything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that doesn't, I mean, maybe it would, you know, wearing a seatbelt's not going to prevent all car accidents, but it doesn't mean it's a bad idea.
And we're actually going to cut it there. We will continue this conversation, get a little more into the theology of it next week. So thanks for listening. Again, contact us, pbrcast@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. And let us know your thoughts. See you guys later.